You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neggebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everybody. My name is Whitney, and today we have a special guest on the podcast, which is Jeanette Dorner from the Mid-Sound Fisheries Enhancement Group. And we will first be talking about some of the news that's been going on lately. Some really devastating news, in fact. This summer, the residents came back into Puget Sound in the San Juan Islands, and the Center for Whale Research does their annual census, and so everyone sort of held their breath, waiting to see if everyone was accounted for and if there were any new babies. Unfortunately, there were no babies first seen, and J50 Scarlett, who was the first baby boomer, was looking thin, and she's been tracked over the last several months and is still looking thin. So we will stay on top of that, and you can follow more information on our Facebook page, facebook.com/whalescout, to learn more. And then, unfortunately, last week, towards the end of July, J35 had a calf that only lived about 30 minutes. And up till the present time on Monday, July 30th, she is still with her deceased calf. And we will discuss this more with our guest, Jeanette Dorner. Welcome back to the Whale Scout Podcast. We are now joined by Jeanette Dorner of Mid-Sound Fisheries Enhancement Group. Jeanette, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me back on, Whitney.
Of course. And we were lucky to meet up with each other this weekend at an event that you were hosting with King County Parks. Do you want to talk really briefly about it?
Sure. Yeah, that was great to have you out with us. So one of the projects that we are working on to restore salmon habitat with the Mid-Sound Fisheries Enhancement Group is a site on the Sammamish River near where the former Red Hook Brewery was in Woodinville. And the site is owned by King County Parks, and so we've partnered with them, and we are working to remove invasive, mostly blackberries, from the shoreline and get it ready to do restoration planting where we can plant native trees and some shrubs and try and get some shade back on the river. One of the biggest problems for salmon in the Sammamish River is that the water temperatures get too hot for the fish, and some of them even die on their way back to try and spawn because the temperatures get so hot. And so one of the most important things that we can do is get more shade on the creek or on the river to try and cool those water temperatures off, which I think in the period that we've been having in terms of the heat around here, I think maybe people can relate to wanting some shade as well.
Absolutely. You're standing out there in the sun and you're like, yep, it makes sense. I get it.
And I do want to give a shout out to Tom Douglas, the restaurants and Rub With Love. They have partnered with us now on this site. They've adopted the site. And this was the second of what they've committed to quarterly events to bring folks out from their organization to help us with the restoration of the site, which is huge that they've adopted the site. And so we really appreciate that partnership as well. And they're also working with some of the vendors that sell their products. So we had a good group from McClendon's Hardware in Woodinville as well that came out and helped us. So that's really fun. It makes it a lot easier, the more partners we have, to get work like this done.
Yeah, and I think it's just really great to have all those, you know, corporate businesses getting involved. And I'm sure that the employees and the staff like to get outside and hang out with their coworkers in a different sort of environment and learn something new altogether.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I would be absolutely remiss if I did not bring up the sad news that we've been having over the last week, which is J35 had a calf that shortly after about 30 minutes has been reported to have died. And for at least the following 6 days has been carrying her dead calf throughout the San Juan Islands. And there's been a lot of really interesting reporting and people who have been watching and almost keeping vigil over the situation. And, reports have come out that this is her sending a message to all of us that perhaps we should not give up, even in this great time of sadness and disappointment. Salmon have been declining for a long time, and you've been on the front lines of it. What's happening, and what can we do to respond?
Yeah, it's just, I think the word that I keep hearing and that I think about when I read updates on that story is just heartbreaking. It's you can really relate, and you can see how much this orca mother is grieving, it's heartbreaking. It's one of the worst things that can happen to you, to lose a child. And as you said, the salmon recovery is not new. We've known that salmon populations have been declining for quite a while. I personally have been working on salmon recovery for almost 20 years now. And, some of the colleagues that I work with on salmon recovery have been working for much longer than that. So we've done a lot of work to understand what are the problems for salmon and what's needed for recovery. And the biggest, it's actually not a mystery to us. We know the things that we need to do to help recover the salmon. The challenge is getting the greater public to understand that and then to support the things that we need to do in order to recover the salmon. And I think what's challenging in the media, there's only a short amount of time to tell a story. And I think people are looking for easy answers as well. So it's a lot easier to point to one main action or one source of the problem and say, if we just take care of this, then we can turn things around. And the thing is, it's not that simple. And I think this report that just came out from the great research that the folks at NOAA are doing on the orca population and which salmon they're eating, that showed how important most of the Puget Sound rivers, the stocks coming out of them, are important for the survival of the orcas, that they depend on those, means we can't just pick one river and do something, or we can't just say, we're going to boost this one hatchery population. We have to really take care of the whole system if we're going to turn things around. And the good news is that we already have plans that identify what actions we need to take in all of those systems. The challenge is being able to implement that, and that's where we need help. So there's two key things. So our role as one of 14 fishery enhancement groups across the state is to work with people in the community to restore critical salmon habitat. So that's what we do. So restoration to restore these habitats that have been lost for the fish is really important. And I see very little discussion of this in the media. There's some focus on dam removal, which is one really powerful action that can help with salmon recovery, as we've seen in the Elwha. But there are lots of other damages that have been caused to the habitat that people are not talking about that are equally as important for us to address if we are going to increase the ability of our watersheds and Puget Sound and other rivers in the state to be able to support increased salmon populations. So things like when we rechannelize streams, or we build dikes along the river, or we fill in the estuaries, or we put armoring along the shoreline, or we take trees away from the river, or we take wood out of the river, or we prevent wood from falling into the river. Those are all super important things for salmon habitat, and people are not talking about that outside the salmon recovery community very much at all. So I'm hoping that maybe there's an opportunity through this even greater heightened awareness about the plight of the orcas and how important that is for the orcas to have salmon also, that people start to look to the folks that have been working on salmon recovery for years and to those plans that already exist to say, okay, how can we support getting those done? And I'm really hopeful that that's one of the conclusions of this task force that the governor has put together, that we need to not reinvent the wheel, but we need to figure out how do we redouble efforts on the recovery side. The one of the things that I think is interesting that just happened, so when I used to work at the partnership, one of the things that I was lead staff for was working with all of our partners across Puget Sound to put together a list of the highest priority large restoration projects that could make a real difference for Puget Sound salmon populations. And this is a list that's developed once every 2 years and then submitted to the state for a funding request. And it's called the Puget Sound Acquisition and Restoration Fund. And the partnership is continuing to do this in part in cooperation with the Recreation and Conservation Office, which manages the funds. And they just released their draft ranked list that they will then present to their policy bodies, and then if that all goes through and gets approved, they'll submit to the governor's office to request that it be put into the budget package that he's going to put together probably by December for the state legislature to take a look at in January, starting in January when they start working on their next biennium budget. And the list is for 13 large projects across Puget Sound. If they were all funded, it would be $50 million. Plus, with this particular fund, they always reserve the first $30 million to go across the board to the different watersheds. There's a formula that they use, depending on the watershed's need and how many listed species they have, that kind of thing. But that money plus the money for the large projects would equal $80 million.
Wow.
The most that that fund has ever received from the state legislature is $70 million. And most years it has been $40 million or less. And usually what happens is this list gets created and only maybe one of the large projects gets funded. And the response that we're getting from decision makers is there's just not enough money. And so they don't have enough money to fund the whole list.
Right.
And so what happens is these are huge projects that will make a significant difference for the fish, and they're not getting funded. So it's not like we don't know what to do. There are people that have been working for a long time, working through very challenging circumstances to put together a design for a project that's ready to go, and then they're not getting funded. So there's an opportunity right now to take this new list that's just been developed with these 13 projects and let our decision makers know that this time we need to just move forward. There's some projects on this list that were on the list 2 years ago that wow. didn't get funded at that time because there wasn't enough money.
And they're all ready to go?
They're ready to go. The requirement is these are projects that have to be ready to go.
Wow.
The design work is done. They're working on their permits. They're ready to go. So, for example, the number one ranked project on this draft list is for a dam removal project on the Nooksack River up by Bellingham. And it's actually the city of Bellingham that's proposing this project. And it is to restore fish passage past the area in the river where they had built a diversion dam in the 1960s to divert water out of the Nooksack River for the water supply for the city of Bellingham. And so when they built that, they did not put in any fish passage at all. So they cut off fish passage to 16 miles of upstream habitat for all the salmon populations in the Nooksack River.
Hmm.
And this dam is at River Mile 7.2.
Hmm.
So they're asking for funding to actually remove this dam, alter their diversion. They've figured out, they've put together a design to figure out a way to divert the water without cutting off the river to salmon passage. And if they can go in and construct this, it will open up 16 miles of the Nooksack River that's been cut off since the 1960s.
Wow.
That's huge.
It's huge, and I don't think many people know about it either.
No. When I was still at the partnership, I had an opportunity to go on a tour to learn about it and to take a look, and it was shocking to me because, you know, the Elwha is the most famous dam removal, obviously, right, in our area, and was huge. But there are other opportunities to restore fish passage in Puget Sound that are not as well known.
Yeah.
So this one on the Nooksack is great. The Tulalip tribe is proposing one on the Pilchuck River that's in this list. And then
a dam removal?
Area, pardon?
A dam removal?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah. How do we get these funded then? So the list is long. They're all ready to go. They've historically not gotten enough money. How do this year we get them enough money?
So the first step is the governor. So this is a draft list. It still needs to be reviewed and approved by the Puget Sound Salmon Recovery Council, which will be meeting in September to do that review.
Okay.
It is likely that unless there's something really unusual, that they will approve this list as it's proposed to them. This was a ranking that was done by, I think, 32 subject matter experts that used an approved ranking system to look at how important these projects were. So some really good work has gone into the ranking. So once the council approves it, then it will go to the state Salmon Recovery Funding Board, and they will need to review and approve that list, and that's likely to happen as well. They have, in past years, never really changed that list that's been submitted to them from Puget Sound. So the key thing is that the governor works with his staff to actually put in a request in his budget for full funding of those projects.
Because
that has not happened since the last term, the last budget that was submitted by Governor Gregoire. When she submitted her last budget right before she finished her term, she requested $80 million for PSAR, and the legislature funded $70 million. Since
wow.
that time, the governor's budget has never been requested that much for PSAR. It's always been less. And that usually sets the high mark for this fund. And then the state legislature, the Senate and the House, debate about how much that they're going to allocate. And they can adjust that however they want if they can agree. But usually the governor's budget is the starting point.
Okay.
So it's really important that the governor is asking all the state agencies to submit their requests by sometime in September this year. And then his staff at the Office of Financial Management, OFM, works with him and his staff in the governor's office to review all of those requests and put together a proposed budget by December. So during that time period, it's valuable for the governor and his staff to hear from folks that care deeply about what ends up in the budget.
Okay.
And the state agencies are not allowed to ask people to advocate for anything that they propose.
Right.
So it's up to individuals to inform themselves and take it upon themselves to advocate to the governor's office and to their legislators as well.
Okay.
Because ultimately it's the legislature that makes the final decision. The governor makes a proposal, which is a really important starting point, but then it's the legislature that makes the final decision.
So
now, I'm just using this, Whitney, as an example, because
sure.
PSAR is such an important fund for the restoration of salmon habitat in Puget Sound. It's the largest source of funding that's directed at the highest priority salmon projects in the salmon recovery plan that was developed for Puget Sound. But there's another fund that's important statewide that's also important in Puget Sound, which is the Maine Fund that the Salmon Recovery Funding Board manages. And they, so the Salmon Recovery Funding Board is going to be deciding this next month in August what their request is going to be to the governor's office for how much money gets put into that fund statewide. And whatever they request is also going to be important for people to support, because they have requested, they have never gotten what they requested.
Yeah.
Ever.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So if right now, or the past 5-10 years, we've been funding salmon recovery at X amount, how much more is really necessary to get us on the right track?
I was going to go look up this statistic, because I was just talking a little while ago with Steve Martin, who's the director of the Governor's Salmon Recovery Office, which is actually housed at RCO, and he has the statistic, but I think it's something like 20% of what we have on the actual list that everybody's put together for the projects that they need to do over the next couple of years, on average about 20% of it is getting funded.
Okay.
The magnitude of the difference is tremendous. And so when people look at habitat restoration and they say, well, we've been trying to restore habitat, but it's not working, there's two reasons why. One is what I've been talking about. It's been vastly underfunded. People look at it as these little projects in the streams, when really what we're talking about are large public works projects. So like, you know, $10 million, $3 million, $5 million, $20 million for one project.
And I think, too, that it's not even just like that $10 million is going to just salmon, but so many other people and things benefit from these big projects, whether it be transportation or fishing rights, water quality. It's not just fish that are benefiting, right?
Yeah. These projects, the salmon are the organizing principle, and they make a huge difference for the salmon, but salmon need functioning ecosystems.
Right.
They need functioning rivers. They need a functioning Puget Sound. So when you restore the health of the whole system, that's what recovers the fish. And that's actually a big reason that I work on salmon recovery, because they are such a key species in the health of our entire system here. If you work on salmon, you're actually working on taking care of everything in the end. So that's the number one thing, is the resources that have been allocated does not match the need at all. So we're barely sort of just kind of trying to hold the line, but we're not doing very well, because there's all these projects that we know we need to do that are unfunded, or we're, you know, spending all our time just trying to find money to get people to work on these projects instead of just being able to work on the projects.
You're right, right.
The second thing that is critical for people to understand, and this is where the political will comes in, is it's also important to stop digging the hole.
Yes.
So what I mean by that is that there's lots of habitat that is still being damaged, that's being degraded right now. It's not like we've stopped hurting the habitat while we're trying to restore it. At the same time we're trying to restore it, there's still damage being done to the habitat. And so we need more support to stop that damage. Because if we don't reverse that trend, then we're just always going to be, you know, going in a circle. It's hard to actually increase the ability of the overall system to support more fish if you're doing something over here to repair while somebody's doing something right over on the other side to destroy. So a great example of that, that's like real recent data, is that King County was funded to do a shoreline survey of all the King County marine shorelines to assess changes in the shoreline, human alterations. And what they found was that the amount of new alterations that they saw on the shoreline, the number of feet that they found that had altered the shoreline to make it less less valuable habitat for salmon and other aquatic life, was just about equal to the amount of shoreline armoring that had been removed from restoration projects.
Gosh.
So basically, all the money that we invested in the armoring removal restoration projects was just to hold the line so that things didn't get worse.
Ugh.
It was not actually an improvement. Ugh. And the interesting thing is, they actually did a look at the records to see how this armoring went in, and the vast majority of it went in unpermitted.
Yeah.
That they, this was not anybody that actually asked for a permit, even though that is a requirement. They, so there was no opportunity to talk to folks to let them know what the impacts were. So I think that one of the things that, you know, in Kitsap County, they have created a program called the Shore Friendly Program that is a voluntary program that provides classes to shoreline landowners so that they can learn about the shoreline. And actually, King Conservation District is offering these workshops as well.
Great.
And this is an opportunity for people who live along the shoreline to get educated about the impacts that their actions have the potential to make. And so some shoreline landowners are starting to learn about how damaging armoring can be, and they're also realizing that they can actually have a much nicer beach if they take out the armoring that is on their property and allow the beach to more naturally form, because armoring actually makes your beach shorter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it interrupts those sediment processes that actually form the beach. And so that ruins habitat for fish that need a gradually sloping beach, and it also makes less beach for people to enjoy. So those shoreline landowners that have actually decided to restore their shorelines really find that they really like the shoreline that they have after the restoration project. But we need to not have those be little tiny spots here and there along the shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
We need lots of people to agree to remove armoring if they have it and if they can, and we can get grants to people, you know, have the resources to help them do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, encourage people not to add new armoring that's damaging habitat.
And then what about, you know, the whole notion of no net loss when there are new development projects? I mean, that seems like that's just holding the line as well.
Yeah, that's what the regulatory standard is. And the tribes have actually been pushing on the regulators to demonstrate whether they think that that actually is working or not.
Yeah.
So,
well, if we want to see improvement, right?
We want to see improvement. So the original idea was that, okay, well, regulations will hold the line, there won't be any net loss, and then if you fund restoration, then you'll get a gain.
I see.
Except that what's the regulations have not been working. When you look at what's going on the ground, it's not actually no net loss.
Mm-hmm.
The loss is continuing to happen. So how do you change that so it actually does function as no net loss? And then you still have to do the restoration, because as we can see, the ability of our ecosystem to support the salmon populations that once were historically here has been significantly degraded.
Yeah. So I want to go back to what you were saying about funding PSAR and some of these other salmon recovery projects. I'm getting all fired up to let Inslee and his staff and everyone in Olympia know that these projects are really important. But working on breaking down some of these barriers to implementation, where is the money going to come from? Like, are there creative funding sources that we can encourage Inslee? I mean, I know that money is just not going to come out of thin air.
Yeah. Are you talking about money for restoration projects in particular?
Yeah, the salmon recovery funding, the PSAR funds. I mean, how can we, where will we get more of that? How can we make that happen where it works for everybody?
Yeah. You know, I think that has to be a discussion both with our elected officials as well as folks who have access to resources outside of the public process. I think there's a combination of that. I know that's something that the partnership is looking at right now, too. They just put out a request for proposals for someone to help them with a plan to see if they could get more private funding available for this kind of work. There's actually, when the partnership was created, there was a foundation that was also created that was supposed to act as potentially a source of a way to pull together private funds that could support Puget Sound recovery activities.
Interesting.
And that never really was implemented. So I think they're thinking about implementing that. So that's like one way. But I think at the legislature, you know, there's a combination of what the public values and then being creative about finding solutions to find those resources. So just to give you an example, so I think that, if I'm remembering correctly, what Steve said about when they did the analysis of how much money it would take to implement all the proposed projects from all the salmon recovery regions of the state right now, it would be about $500 million.
Wow.
I was looking on the Department of Transportation's website. So I live in Tacoma. I have to drive to get to my areas where I'm working through the I-5 corridor and Highway 16, that area. And anybody who's driven through there knows about the massive construction that's going on all along there.
Mm-hmm.
Their estimate on their website for how much all of those projects combined cost, it's $500 million.
For just the Tacoma area work?
Yeah, and actually, now that I'm thinking about that, I think that was actually, I just misspoke. It was one of their projects.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So the scale is dramatically different. Like, so right. For like one or two freeway projects, we could restore all of the salmon habitat that we've identified as projects right now statewide.
That's so crazy.
But where does the Department of Transportation get their money? They have a separate dedicated revenue source that was created by the state that generates funds that they can then allocate to these projects.
I see. Okay.
So, and that they've done that because they know that there is enough public support from voters that they believe that maintaining our highway infrastructure is important, that they would be willing to pay a gas tax.
Right, yeah.
To support, and it generates that kind of scale of money. So in order for us to, in the public arena, to generate the real scale of funding that we need to do the salmon projects, we have to have the public start valuing the green infrastructure that mm-hmm. we need as much as the gray infrastructure that we need. And then the elected officials need to feel like they can create a new revenue source without upsetting their constituents enough that they get unelected in the next election.
Right. Okay. I hear what you're saying.
And if you get to that point, then the legislators can figure out what's the best revenue strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all sorts of things that people have brainstormed, but the first, you have to have the political will. And the way you start generating that political will is for people to understand there is that need and that care deeply about it, and then channel that into saying, we need to do something different.
Yeah.
So that's why, for me, it has been so heartbreaking to see what's going on with the orcas right now and this orca calf. But at the same time, if the result is that people who care deeply about the orcas and the health of Puget Sound and our ecosystem see that and are galvanized to take real action, and not just an easy fix, or even if it doesn't seem that easy, but not just one, but really systemic changes, then it might be worth it in the end, because I think that there still is time. We still could make that shift.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest challenge is we have to be willing as an entire community to make that shift. If we are not willing, I don't think we'll be successful.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the Atlantic Salmon Net Pen disaster, where, you know, it was so alarming when it happened at first, and yet something really positive came out of it. And I hope for the sake of our whales and our salmon that the legacy that will live on with this little calf is that there'll be a big change.
So that's
my hope. I've seen these tragedies play out over and over again. And so I hope this time is different. And it's interesting watching J35 be so persistent. And
I think
it is, there's something to it. And it gives me chills. So Jeanette, I've been just really fired up and inspired talking with you today. Is there anything else that you want to add today before we wrap up?
You know, I'm happy to follow up with you afterwards with more specific information about those fund sources that I was talking about.
Yeah.
So that if folks get in contact with you and they want to know more specifics so that they can speak intelligently about it when they're talking to folks, I could do that.
Yeah, and we can include them on the podcast page at whalescout.org and put links up there as well so that people can access the resources.
That would be great. But yeah, so like even like right now is a great time to start, you know, talking to legislators, especially when they're, you know, legislators are out working on their reelection campaign, so they can be generally available during the legislative session. It's a lot harder because they're so busy. You get
right.
like maybe 10, 15 minutes with them. So right now is a great time to start checking in with folks and letting them know that this is something that's important.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you again for coming on our podcast today. And I look forward to chatting with you again very soon. And I just want to thank you so much for your time.
Oh, yeah. Whitney, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this and for you to help me and others that are working on salmon recovery get the word out to folks about how we can all work together.
Of course. That's our role, is try to bring salmon people and whale people together and accomplish the same goal. So thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. A couple of reminders. If you are passionate about orcas and salmon and you want to be involved in these issues, please, please, please come to the Governor's Task Force meetings that are coming up. The next one is August 7th in Wenatchee, and then the one after that is August 28th in Anacortes. And your comments are needed and your presence is needed. These are both on Tuesdays. If you absolutely cannot be there, you can go online and just Google Governor Inslee's Killer Whale Task Force, go on the website, and email in your comments to be sure that your voice is heard. Thank you very much, and namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information. Malatif est trop bien démodé, aussi mal coiffé qu'écrasé, j'entretiens ma gueule négligée, j'esquive conseils préjugés.